people of Israel were a small nation. A small nation that sat surrounded by great empires, mighty empires, as Babylon or Assyria or Egypt or Persia would rise in prominence. Their armies would sweep across little Israel just on their way to go conquer more important peoples. And as an empire would sweep across Israel, along with their armies would come gods. Along with the armies of the foreign nations would come the statues and symbols and rites and promises of foreign gods. In would come the god Marduk, the warrior god, promising military victory like none had ever seen before, endless power for the followers of Marduk. The promises went. Then out would go Marduk, and another empire would come in, one that worshipped Baal, the fertile god, Baal, promising that every harvest would be the greatest harvest there ever had been. Endless wealth for those whom Baal favored. All the while, the faithful in little Israel would continue to worship their God, stubbornly insisting that there was one and only one God, and it was their God. This one God, Israel testified, has dominion over the earth and the seas and the skies and could do anything. This one God was standing behind and beside all of history, and yet, despite being able to do anything, chose to be in beloved covenant with little unimportant Israel. Now, to these claims, in the face of these claims, the other nations who had conquered them would say, well, if your God is so great, how come we beat your armies every time? If your God is so great, how come you aren't rich? And while we're on the topic of theology, if your God is the one and only one God there is, why would God choose to be worshipped by nobody but a bunch of nobodies? It doesn't make a lot of sense, these claims that Israel makes. These other conquering nations, what they say, they make a good argument. They make a good argument. It has the ring of truth to it. If powerful people are able to do whatever they please here on earth, maybe that's just how the heavens want it. And if some other people get kicked around here on earth, can't catch a break, if that's how it is here on earth, maybe that's just how heaven wants it. Now, this is a sort of a logic. It's a logic that makes a certain amount of sense. It's the logic of false gods. It's the logic of false gods. They make promises that sound reasonable, but actually they're just empty. You see, false gods will promise power, but only for those who are already pretty powerful. The false gods that people worshipped back then, they're still around. I don't want you to think that what I'm saying is that in the past people were very superstitious and believed in things that weren't real and now we know better. I'm not saying that. The false gods that people believed in are still around today, still very much being worshipped today. There are the promises of that false god success. People used to call this god Marduk. Now we just call it success. I personally think Marduk has a little bit of a better ring to it. But still the same God, that sharp-dressed liar success is still around. Success says, build your life around me. Sacrifice whatever you need to for me. You don't need anything other than me. Success promises that every single day can be a prelude to something greater. If you sacrifice it all for success, there's no limit to what you can accomplish. Success promises. But the problem is the promises of the future begin to run out of tomorrows. Our lives go by and we find that however much success we amass, it is never what we thought we were going to achieve. And all we're left with at the end of the day is the certain knowledge that today is not enough. Today is not enough. What we had hoped for is not what we have. Then there's also the promises of that false god, pleasure. Pleasure has had 1,000 names over the ages. Pleasure cries out, build your life around me. Sacrifice whatever you need to for me. I am at least real. You know that I exist. Build your life around me. Pleasure is always careful to stand just out of reach and always, always in flattering lighting. Pleasure stands just out of reach and says, there is a final, full embrace with me. Just out of your reach. Just come a little bit closer and you'll have me. I'm just beyond that next indulgence. The problem is that these promises are always ever just out of reach. Each new indulgence requires greater sacrifice than the one before, and yet offers only the same promise, yet not able to be fulfilled. And what you are left with at the end of the day is something that up close is very shabby, very lonely. False gods make promises that sound reasonable. They say, build your life around me, and then you will have. They make promises that sound reasonable, but they are actually just empty. False gods claim that if you are just in their good graces, then you will be okay. And when you are not okay, the false gods tell you, that's because there's something wrong with you. Israel. Little Israel. With all of its problems. At a low point of real desperation in the history of the people of Israel, things were at their worst. Their land had been taken from them, their capital had been taken from them, their leaders had been taken from them. They were forced to live in a faraway land where they were strangers. At a low point of real desperation in the history of the people of Israel, when the promises of these foreign gods seemed all too compelling. This is the point at which we hear the words of Scripture that were read. When the troubles of the people of Israel had tumbled past the final defenses they thought they would ever be able to amass, that is when Scripture offers these words from the mouth of God. Hear me. Everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. And you that have no money, come, buy and eat. Come, buy wine and milk without money and without price. Why do you spend your money for that which is not bread? And why do you labor for that which does not satisfy? Listen to me, eat what is good, and delight yourselves in rich food. God calls the thirsty ones to come drink clear waters. God calls them to the clear waters because they are thirsty, because they are in need. God calls to them. God invites hungry people to come to a rich feast because they are hungry. God calls those with no money to come to the market and buy rich, good things because they are in need of them. This is the truth about God that Israel knew for so long, a truth so precious that people didn't want to believe it. The mighty God who can do anything. The mighty God of Israel chooses to be on the losing side. The mighty God chooses to be on the losing side. This is the same God whose voice can be heard ringing in the Magnificat, Mary's proclamation of faith that the poor are welcomed and fed and the rich sent empty away. These are the same words echoed in Jesus' words, saying, I have come not for the righteous, but for sinners I have come. Same God. The mighty God who could spend eternity in utter peace, undisturbed. Instead, God opens her ears. God fills her ears with laments. God fills her ears with the lamentations of those who are heartbroken. That is who God listens to. The God who is perfect and flawless and holy. This God chooses to be with the tainted and the desperate. God is beside those who are tearing their own lives apart, seeking after that which is not bread, consuming that which does not satisfy. This is who God chooses to be with. This is the truth about God that Israel knew for so long. A truth so precious that people did not believe it. God is with those who are in need because they are in need. Not because of any other qualification or because of any other means of deserving God's presence. God is with those who are in need because they are in need. False gods offer strength to the already strong. Blessings to those who are already blessed. The capacity to do what they would to those who are already behaving just as they please. False gods do this because if these are the promises they make, it doesn't matter whether they exist or not. And so they can persist generation upon generation, changing names, changing faces, but still, nevertheless, calling people to build their lives upon them. A foundation that proves to be nothing at all. But God, God, the true God, the God of Israel, whose testimony we have been given as an inheritance, a gift from the people of Israel. God gives meaning to those whose lives have fallen apart. God meets those who are in need. God desires those for whom all earthly help has collapsed. God chases after not those who are faithful to God, but those who have been failed, who have been failed by every false god there is, and who are in need of someone real. You can build your life on the promises of God. These things are solid. These things are certain. God will meet you when you are in need. Even at your worst, even at your lowest, that is where God desires to meet us. And so, if you are looking for God, if you are seeking God, then examine your life. This is the lesson we hear from Scripture. Examine your life. Look to the places where you feel there is something missing, something lacking in you. Look to the places where success just can't be found, or where relationships just keep dissolving into nothing, or where the future seems totally uncertain. Look to those places in yourself where you feel like a person who really had it all together would be doing better at this whole thing than you are. Look to where the trappings of what you think makes a good life, look to where the trappings of that are threadbare and thin in you. Look for the places in yourself where, in your heart of hearts, when you are speaking to yourself late at night, where you wonder, is there something wrong with me? Why can't I do this? Is there something wrong with me? Why do I keep doing this? That is the very place where God longs to meet you. In secret places of brokenness and emptiness, in parts of yourself that you might think you need to fix before God would ever have anything to do with you. Nothing could be further from the truth. Nothing could be further from the truth than the idea that you need to fix yourself before God will ever have anything to do with you. In the places that are broken, that is where God's hand is outstretched. In memories that you intend to take to the grave, that is where God is waiting for you. God who has burst free from the grave. Those are the places where God is longing to say to you, to give you a word, to give you a word when you need to hear it. When God longs to say, listen. Listen to me, everyone who thirsts. Come to the waters. And you that have no money, come, buy and eat. Come, buy wine and milk without money, without price. Why do you spend your money for that which is not bread? And your labor for that which does not satisfy? Listen carefully. Eat what is good. And delight yourselves in rich food. For you shall go out in joy and be led back in peace. And the mountains and the hills before you, they shall burst into song, and all the trees of the field shall clap their hands. The joy of God is not that we have become so worthy. The joy of God comes because in our need we turn. In our need we are finally able to see the hand of God stretching out to us, offering us her presence like a gift.